Greetings, everyone. Are you ready for an accelerated course in higher consciousness? This is how our global village will get ahead of the accelerated rate of change we are now seeing in the world. It won't be with the same consciousness that created the problems we see. It will be with a new consciousness that is now evolving with the angels of our better nature. Welcome to Cosmic Love.
Well, howdy, howdy. This is Christopher Rudy with Cosmic Love for November 25th, 2017. And as you all know, there's a lot of shift going down these days. Shift as in big changes. The big 2017 shift. Shift happens. And since the beginning of the year, I've been doing a series of blogs called the 2017 Big Shift. And the links to that are on the podcast show page. And you can see, if you check that out, that I've been trying to distill years of research on future trends, including 10 years of interviews on my Cosmic Love radio show with people who are a lot smarter than me about the global shift dynamics that we are now seeing. My intention has been to report on the global shift dynamics with reference to self-evident solutions to systemic problems we face as a global civilization. Well, it's a month before Christmas, and all through the house, the public is baffled by big changes they don't understand. Okay, that doesn't rhyme, but it's true. This is the subject of the Thanksgiving article I sent out the other day for those who are on the list. And I'm glad to add you if you're interested. And I wrote that Thanksgiving article. It was called The Big Love with an Attitude of Gratitude. And the link to that is in the podcast notes also. And it's in two parts that you might find interesting with videos and articles from this last week. And part one was Operation Alice in Wonderland is about to start. That may seem like a obscure kind of a title, but there's stuff going on that's coming out, particularly in the alternative media, about big changes going on in the world, and I'll be going into that a little bit. And part two is Operation Quantum Leap is going global. And the scale of these changes, the width and breadth dimensions of this quantum leap, ascension process, you might say, it's going mainstream. It's going global. It's not there yet. It's in the process. It's reaching critical mass as we speak. Big buzz, big news going out this last week. I'll be going into that a little bit more during the show. A little background here. People wonder who I am to be writing about and talking about this stuff. And for first-time listeners to the show, you're probably not aware that I was trained as a visionary over many years, and I lectured at Buckminster Fuller's World Game Studies Workshop 43 years ago. And later that year, and this is back in 1974, I spoke to 10 agencies of the federal government in the Science and Astronautics Chamber of the Rayburn Building on Capitol Hill, and I gave the final keynote address after a three-day summit of futurists from the World Future Society and Barbara Marx Hubbard's Committee for the Future. And this was the government officials from the U.S. Communications Agency, U.S. Information Agency, the American Bicentennial Commission, and other government agencies who were asking the futurists how we were going to celebrate the revolution, the bicentennial of revolution. And I told them how that could happen with an upgrade of our core constitutional freedoms of speech, assembly, to petition government, etc., by using the new communications technology with cable TV stations and mini computers back then, and how they could be integrated with a universal interactive interface for mass-to-mass communications. How that would look like, you know, what that would look like, how that would work, and how that would make government accountable to the purpose for which it serves, which went over like a lead balloon. As one college junior college vice president from New York City, told me, he said, that would eliminate bureaucracy, and you're not going to hear from these agencies of the federal government. And I didn't, except for the click on my phone whenever I picked up my phone back in Ohio over the next several weeks. That stopped after I started answering my phone by saying, Ace Janitorial Services, this is DA speaking. Maybe they figured I was a joke by then. I don't know. I do know that over the years, there's been clear indications, like many people that are in the public eye and rather outspoken about what's going on, that we're all being monitored. I mean, you know, that's kind of ubiquitous. And as David Wilcox said in a video from this last week regarding this entire situation that surfaced this last week with the Marines going into CIA headquarters, and I'll be going into that a little bit more. But as he said, it's better to have high visibility and high exposure, rather than a limited exposure, because basically, in the case of like David and myself, we go back many years and we're not blowing smoke. You know, I've been a futurist going way back, and David has been out there, you know, talking about what's really going on, David Wilcox. And he has he was on two talk shows this last week. I'm going to provide those links also in the podcast show notes, because this is big stuff that's going on. Point I'm making is that I was way ahead of my time back then, 43 years ago. And some will say I'm ahead of my time now, but now it's a better time. The whole world is wired with the internet now. It's not just cable TV networks and satellite downlinks and mini computers. We're talking about much more powerful computers and people's handheld smartphones. And like I said, the world is wired with the internet now. It's like an instant everywhere interactive global village. And there's this new information technology which could liberate the wisdom of the crowd, you know, our collective social conscience and our new social networks. Global peace, health, and prosperity could mature very fast now. So that message is why I began doing my Cosmic Love radio show almost 11 years ago. I've interviewed a lot of people who are a lot smarter than me about many cosmic mysteries and political realities that I was unaware of. And perhaps the biggest mystery of all to me was what happened to America to betray the American dream of Americans in this crazy world we live in now. And it's not just all the false flags and fake news and outright propaganda in the mainstream media. It's worse than that. The dark side, deep state, has become blatantly evil in ways that have become self-evident to millions of Americans just over this last year. It's, like I say, hitting critical mass. And when I say that, critical mass isn't necessarily a majority. Critical mass is enough good people who are holding the balance for the rest. And one of my favorite quotes is Dr. Hawkins' Power Versus Force, where he says just a few percent of the public, and this is with behavioral kinesiology and testing with millions of people over years, they've found that just a small percent of the population who are operating at a higher conscious level can hold the balance for tens of thousands of individuals who are virtually unconscious of what's going on and are just trying to live their lives. So this is always the way it's been with spiritual adepts, and I'm not saying that I am one, but you don't have to be a spiritual genius to speak of spiritual geniuses. Well, that's my motto anyway. And there are spiritual geniuses like Dr. Hawkins, wrote the book Power versus Force, and other enlightened people that are coming out with messages that are pricking the conscience of sleepers who are really enlightened people with soul contracts that came in with, you know, a mission. Some people call them star seeds or indigos or whatever. Souls that are coming in for this purpose of basically global enlightenment, systemic mass awakening, with some people call it the ascension process and the collective conscience of humanity. Excuse me. So anyway, this is what's going on with the dynamic, and some people would call it spiritual warfare. But David Wilcock and others are talking about, and the internet's all abuzz now with the developments over the last couple of weeks, and how there's a battle for the republic that's going on. And this is a war over the heart, over and for the hearts and minds of Americans. And most Americans don't even know what's going on, because truth of this is never reported in the prostitute press, you know, the corporate media. Some people call it the deep state media or the fake news media. Take this last week, for example. I mean, it was widely reported on the internet that there was a massive arrest of hundreds of Arab leaders in Saudi Arabia, including a billionaire, or several billionaires. But, you know, there's basically the power elite in Saudi Arabia. There was like a major purge, arresting, and there's all kinds of reports of what's going on there, that this is huge, folks. For many reasons. I mean, these were the primary financiers behind ISIS and Mideast War. I mean, the Saudis were also behind the 9/11 attack on America, along with the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, which is the actual source of the acronym ISIS, Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. Also, this last week, there's highly credible internet sources, including Benjamin Fulford and David Wilcock, as I mentioned, they revealed that not only did the U.S. Marines storm CIA headquarters, but that in America there's been 2,000 indictments of deep state kingpins that have been issued for court hearings. So, according to Fulford, his Pentagon sources confirm multiple internet reports that the Marines stormed CIA headquarters this past weekend, and one of the aims was to shut down Operation Mockingbird, which some of you may have heard of. It's that the CIA group that turned the mass media, as well as Google and Facebook, into tools for mass mind control propaganda. Now, some people listening to the show are well aware of this Operation Mockingbird, going back decades, and how they've infiltrated the mainstream media, now sometimes referred to as the deep state media, and or otherwise referred to as the corporate media or the cabal media, and other people refer to it as the Zionist-controlled media. And I'm going to go into that term, Zionism and Christian Zionism, as a huge issue behind the scenes. It's like the cause behind the cause that we see on a very limited basis in mainstream media, and in a more of an in-depth basis in alternate media, independent media from good sources. And what that's about is basically who controls the world. And we're talking about 1% who of the power elite have been in control of the world in general. We're talking about the major media, military, medical, management matrix, you might say. And there's just a very few percent, and like approximately, let's say 1%, you know, has been controlling the world. And about 4% are sellout puppets of the 1%. I mean, they're just, you know, prostitutes. In terms of the media, but we're talking about people that have more or less sold their souls to the controllers. And there's about 90%, and we're talking about public in general, are asleep. Or are we even aware this is going on? About 5% know and are trying to wake up the 90%. But the 1% don't want the 5% waking up the 90%. So this is kind of the dynamics of, you might say, the psychographics, demographics of, you know, of global collective consciousness and the dynamics of this warring in the members. Why is this endless war thing continue on? What's the real story behind it? Who are the controllers? Who are the Zionists, you know, that the white knights or the white hats, you might say, in the U.S. military are going after in the CIA? Who have been running this Operation Mockingbird, virtually mass media mind control through, you know, again, Google and Facebook. This last year, we've been finding out that they've been using algorithms to manipulate search results and to affect, you know, what kind of viewing you have and who is watching your Facebook posts and that whole the whole system, that how Facebook works and how it's being rigged. And how it's become an extension of this Operation Mockingbird, and that sounds outrageous to some people. Actually, I use Facebook myself. I'm kind of open book in that regard. You know, I use it as a research tool, getting graphics, infographics, videos, articles. I found it an extraordinary tool. But it's just this last year, for example, Google changed its, no longer uses this motto of "Do no evil." And it's just, things have changed. It's like there's factions of Google, just like factions of Facebook and factions of the CIA, which are the good guys. And there's factions that are, so to speak, you know, the controllers within those organizations and controls behind the controllers, handlers of the controllers, you might say, that have been tweaking, the information organization processes in ways that are not conducive to general enlightenment, let's just put it that way. So there are a few of us following the news this last couple of weeks who really understand what this is all about and who is behind it. And this is really important to know. And that's why today, the rest of the show, I'm going to be playing the audio from a video, and I'll provide the link to that video in the podcast notes. And this, I think, is really important because we're talking about the root cause of much of the evil we see in America and in the world is spiritual deception. And I'm talking about, and this is an uncomfortable subject for a lot of Christians, which I like to think of myself as, and this is how about 70 million Christians in America have been deceived. And that's a heavy subject. I mean, you just don't go saying that, you know, among Christians, because, you know, they believe religiously, you know, and just like, you know, true believers in any religion believe religiously that, you know, we all have our free will, you know, to believe, you know, freedom of religion to believe what we want. But shining a light on this massive deception is a serious subject that is rarely explained well, if at all. And it's really important. I mean, this is why the rest of the show today is the audio from this really good documentary on Christian Zionism, what it is, how it got started, and why it is the core issue behind America's corruption that supports Mideast wars. And again, the video link for this documentary will be posted in the podcast show notes, so please share this with those who really want to know who are the Ashkenazi Zionists who have been infiltrating mainstream media and the banking system and much of the U.S. Congress, and basically are the core of the dark side deep state that has been behind this endless terror, war, insanity that's been tearing America apart and demoralizing Americans. So I'm going to go into this now. I'm queuing this up now. So until we meet again, enjoy this mind-blowing documentary on the Christian Zionism behind the endless war we see in the world today. This is quite a message. I hope you enjoy it. And until we meet again, gotta keep the faith, see the good, and make it so. Mm-hmm. Happy trails till we meet again. And here's the documentary.
America's economy is war-based, and those who plan it depend upon Christians for their support of those wars. Christian Zionists, by whatever name, are the primary enablers of our serial wars, of the sanctions against other states, and of the occasional occupations of Islamic states at acts of war against other countries. Why do Christians support war when Jesus demanded peace? Because they have been conditioned to think Islam is anathema to them. Celebrity Christian Zionist leaders allow themselves to be used as propagandists against Islamic governments, including Iraq, Palestine, Afghanistan, Somalia, Bosnia, Iran, Sudan, and more. Our purpose is to explain why and how this has been done, and what can be done to change it, because it can be changed. Wars are an official economic policy of our government, which is why we have so many. Wars give governments many advantages for controlling people. But only Christian Zionists believe that war is an integral and necessary part of their religion. This is unchristlike, in error, and conflicts have become perpetual because of it. Christian Zionists, by whatever name, are the only remaining sizable faction that supports wars in places like Iraq. Therefore, responsibility for the economic and social disaster that we now see, including the rising energy and food costs, is largely theirs. As such, Christian Zionists are the darlings of presidential candidates, and sad to say, the seeds of their own destruction. We find them among our friends, families, and associates. Because they are among our best allies, our bosses, even our wives and children, we cannot just turn our backs on them or despise and ridicule them. We need to learn to deal with Christian Zionists. This looks much easier when we understand that Christian Zionism is a promoted religion that makes little sense on its own. It is not believed because it is logical. Endless wars always result in the destruction of the morality and the currency of the aggressor nation. This has happened throughout history, including Great Britain. Christian Zionists can easily be swayed to support war so long as they believe that Muslims are on the receiving end of our bombs and bullets and the state of Israel is the beneficiary. We're in no way excusing Jewish war-making Zionists or cowardly congressmen for their role in all this. But for every Jewish Zionist in America, there are 10 or 20 Christian Zionists doing their work for them. Christian Zionists have turned their backs on Jesus' words, "Blessed are the peacemakers, and love even your enemy as you love yourself." This is Christianity. Anyone who claims that they follow Christ and fails to stand for justice and protection of the innocent will definitely have some explaining to do.
Christianity, as you find in the Christian Bible, which is this, the Christian New Testament, only a few pages long, can be read in a very short period of time. Quite a bit of his repetitious stories that are told over and over again. I have presented this to dozens of pastors and religious leaders and asked them to show me one line in this book that would ever allow any person who calls themselves a Christian to take a life or support a war. The Christian Bible demands peace. The words of Jesus Christ are words of peace. Blessed are the peacemakers. It's probably the most quoted phrase, and there are no exceptions. You cannot go through this and find some place where Jesus in some underhanded way said, well, war is okay on some occasions, or it's okay to kill somebody under certain circumstances. It's just not there.
Political change can only come from understanding the roots of Christian Zionism. Americans of all religions need to understand what Christian Zionists believe and why. The vast majority of members and churches who put Israel first before Jesus do not even consider themselves Christian Zionists. They would even deny it. They usually describe themselves as evangelicals, dispensationalists, premillennialists, or just Christians. When they stop and think about it, very few laymen are comfortable with the radical elements of Christian Zionism. Their church is a comfortable social outlet, especially for their families, and they really don't believe in the Christian Zionist jargon that's spoken there. At the apex of the Christian Zionist sect, which is only a little over 100 years old, are media personalities such as John Hagee, Ron Parsley, Pat Robertson, the late Jerry Falwell, and many others. Each has openly expressed the view that war upon Islamic states is necessary, including war against Iran.
It is time for America to consider a military preemptive strike against Iran to prevent a nuclear holocaust in Israel.
Christian Zionism is the only religion that has war as one of its principles, where the people who follow it actually are expected to accept war, where they feel that war is necessary to the carrying out of their religious end, where their view of paradise, where their view of heaven is actually involved in war. No other religion that I know of is anything like that. And Christianity itself, based on fundamental Christianity, 2,000 years old, has nothing to do with Christian Zionism 100 or 150 years old.
How does one tell who is a Christian Zionist? We have a question litmus test. It's non-invasive and usually welcomed. It is, do you believe that the state of Israel is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy?
Do you believe that the modern state of Israel is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt at all.
If Israel is the fulfillment of biblical prophecy, which it is not, then where does Jesus fit in? Jesus or Israel? One or the other is the fulfillment of the prophecy of the Old Testament. There is no room for both. Orthodox or traditional Christians have always believed that Jesus, not Israel, is the correct answer. No other branch of Christianity believes that political Israel is in God's plan for the future. This while ignoring Israel's intolerance, its racism, its constant wars. Israel is to them, the Christian Zionists, the chosen people of God still today. About one-third of the 210 million American adults who identify themselves in polls and censuses as Christian are influenced by Christian Zionism. That's about 70 million people, making Christian Zionists the most powerful and coveted voting bloc in the world. This can be seen during any election year. The most obvious example was John McCain's reckless pursuit of the Christian right that led him to gross embarrassment at pulpits next to maniacal Zionists like John Hagee and Ron Parsley, both of whom call for the nuclear destruction of Iran. Rod Parsley has said that America was created expressly for the purpose of destroying Islam.
I know that this statement sounds extreme, but I'm not shrinking back from its implications. The fact is that America was founded, I'm going to stagger you right now, America was founded in part with the intention of seeing this false religion destroyed.
It is rewarding to us and constructive to God's plan to read that the giant closet Zionist Southern Baptist Convention recently announced with great distress that its membership is falling to the lowest level in 20 years. Perhaps it will return to Orthodox Christianity. We hope so. The teachings of Jesus Christ inescapably demand peace and love of one's neighbor. This has been America's one badge of righteousness. The war between the states from 1861 to 1865 was an assault on the Christian values of justice and morality. It diminished and divided the church. It taught moral Christian men about mass killing. A more direct attack on Christianity came from Oxford University Press in England in 1908 when it published a false and intentionally misleading Bible called the Schofield Reference Bible. Its mission was to inject into the Christian text reinterpretations that made the future state of Israel the way to God.
This book was so important that Oxford University Press opened its first branch in the United States to publish it. They had never published an American book before. They had not published Whittier's books, his poetry. They had not published Longfellow. They had not published any of our great American authors, but they published this.
The Oxford University Press published the Schofield book. They promoted it into key American seminaries and Bible schools where the beliefs of future generations of pastors could be molded to cloud the peacemaking traditions of Christianity and benefit the state of Israel. Most pastors and teachers were unaware of any danger, since there was no state of Israel at the time. Most of them did not even know the Jewish state was being planned. Few guessed that the Schofield book would be used by secular powers to bend Christians into political and financial servitude to the Jewish state, present-day Israel. American Christianity became increasingly Zionized after 1948, when the State of Israel appeared as a result of a United Nations edict. Oxford University Press was strongly Zionist-influenced, and it provided a huge financial and promotional boost when it opened a publishing branch in New York City. This for the purpose of publishing the Christian Zionist Manual in 1908, called the Schofield Reference Bible. This book was to be a foundational document upon which Christian Zionism, by a host of other names including Evangelicalism, would begin its methodical growth by deception. The founders of World Zionism, especially Chaim Weizmann, successor to Theodor Herzl, had much to do with drawing the United States into World War I. A mere handful of dominant American Zionists were able to influence President Wilson, possibly by blackmail, to join the war in Europe over his advisor's objections. America lost over 100,000 men who were entirely innocent of any involvement in European politics. And out of all this, the World Zionist movement gained a piece of land called Palestine. The land of the Philistine was England's payoff to World Zionism for causing America to enter World War I on the side of Great Britain, which was losing the war to Germany. By 1917, the World Zionist movement was in high gear toward occupying Arab Palestine after the Balfour Declaration gave them a claim, without title, to any land occupied by the Palestinians. The Schofield Reference Bible was copyrighted in 1909. It is an Old and New Testament with most of the notes in the original text added in the Old Testament. Later, many notes were added to the New Testament as the Schofield Reference Bible was re-edited several times, with the most radical change being made in 1967.
The book has been updated over and over again, each time by Oxford University Press, always having Mr. Schofield's name on the front of it. In fact, he's listed as the editor in the most recent edition, even though he's been dead for about 40 years.
The cover shows the editor, Cyrus I. Schofield, with seven other men on the editorial board. One of these was Reverend James M. Gray, president of the Moody Bible Institute, one of the most influential organizations in evangelical circles of the day. There were also two other seminary leaders on the editorial board. Those lending their names were predominantly heads of seminaries and Christian colleges.
What happened is the distribution took place through these seminaries. And then when young pastors were graduated from these schools and they went back out and took a church and started to teach from the pulpit, they had one of these in their hands. This is what was given to them. And I suppose that they were probably given to the seminaries. It was likely that the Oxford Press was very generous in making sure that all these people had these.
What exactly is the Schofield Reference Bible? Let us look critically at just one page of the book that has become the guide for secularist Jews in Israel and evangelical Christians in America to explain why they think present-day Israel has the right to all of the land in the Middle East, beginning with Palestine. Genesis 12:3 is part of the Torah and is quoted in the Quran. These three verses are standard in the King James translation and very similar in other Bibles. Let me paraphrase it as you read the Old English. The Lord told Abram to leave his home and family and go into a land that God would show him. God promised to then make of Abram a great nation, bless him, and make his name great, protect him by blessing his friends and cursing his enemies. And from Abram's seed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. Now for the part that is important to traditional Christians. I quote, "In these shall all the families of the earth be blessed." Christianity has for 2,000 years taken this to be the first notice from God of the coming Savior of mankind. Genesis 12:3 is the earliest covenant that God made to Abram, and it is the one used by Israelis and Christian Zionists to justify the idea that the entire Middle East should be Israeli property. I quote, "Yet thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, into a land that I will show thee." Zionists of all races interpret the phrase, "into a land that I will show thee," as a perpetual land grant to present-day Israel. Now we will examine the most effective corrupter of Scripture in history, one Cyrus I. Scofield, a 19th century American. Note on page 19 that the footnotes dwarf the text. Note also that the italicized insertions in between the verses that are not part of the Bible. In the 1967 version of the Scofield Reference Bible, there are more footnotes than in the original 1909 version, and since the death of Scofield in 1921, the footnotes have grown to dwarf the text in these very important pages. Let's look again at the vital footnote 2 found in the Scofield Reference Bible in 1967 on page 19. The footnote reads, "God made an unconditional promise of blessing through Abram's seed to the nation of Israel to inherit a specific territory forever." But the passage doesn't say anything like this. God orders Abram to go to a land that God will show him, using the first person familiar, thee, meaning Abram and no one but Abram. The passage does not say that God is giving any piece of land to anybody forever. It doesn't say anything about Israel.
Now, how complicated is it? Leave your land, go where I tell you to go, and I will protect you. How complicated is that? How many footnotes does it take to understand what God was saying to Abraham? I mean, anybody who reads that should be able to figure that out, that that's what the message is. But Mr. Scofield wrote all of this to explain it.
In fact, if we accept biblical history, we know that Abram had no children when this happened, and not for quite a while. So there was no person or nation named Israel when this promise was made. There was no state or nation named Israel. The man Israel did not even exist in Abram's imagination when God spoke to him. How then could Scofield or the Oxford University Press say that God was promising the land to the present-day state of Israel forever?
Where did the state of Israel get in this? When Abraham was spoken to by God, Israel, the man known as Israel, hadn't been born yet. He was two generations in the future. And he was not a state. He was a person that eventually had a tribe. And then after him, 3,000 years later, along comes a bunch of Europeans who name their state after him. But this says that God gave that land to the nation of Israel forever. Imagine 70 million people who are taught this every day.
The Oxford University Press did not stop there. Note 3 on page 19 reads, "There is a promise of blessing upon the individuals and nations who bless Abram's descendants, and a curse lay upon those who persecute the Jew." The word Jew is used in the footnotes in describing an occurrence 2,000 to 3,000 years before the word Jew existed. In fact, Jew is taken from the name Judah, who was, it is told, one of the 12 grandsons of Abraham, Abram of Genesis 12. Neither Judah nor Jew existed, and this footnote is a false concoction. Note 3 continues, "God's promised Abram and his seed certainly did not terminate at Sinai with the giving of the law. The New Testament and Old Testament are full of post-Sinai promises concerning Israel and the land which is to be Israel's everlasting possession." Listeners should be asking, why is Oxford University Press putting words in the mouths of the readers of this Bible? To make them think their God promises blessings and curses on people today based on how they think about or act toward present-day Jews and present-day Israel. What about all the other people in the world? Let's read further in the footnotes to Genesis 12:3. "Promise to the Gentiles, I will bless them that bless thee. Those who honor Abram will be blessed, and curse them that curse thee." This was a warning literally fulfilled in the history of Israel's persecution. It has invariably fared ill with the people who have persecuted the Jew, and well with those who have protected him. And here is the punchline. For a nation to commit the sin of anti-Semitism brings inevitable judgment. The future will still more remarkably prove this principle. Isn't that convenient?
So now you have anti-Semitism is created in Abraham's time. The footnote to Abraham's words create and the word anti-Semitism. Christian Zionism believes that our nation will be judged if we are not sufficiently kind as a nation to the state of Israel. They have made sin a sort of a national corporate event rather than an individual thing. Of course, there is no such thing as national sin. Nations don't sin, we do. Individuals do, men do. But this has created a national sin so that Christian Zionists like John Hagee believe that God will rain fire down on our country, will somehow punish our entire nation for being insufficiently kind to the state of Israel.
Zionist-friendly Oxford University Press says in our Bible that the whole country will be considered in sin, and we will be in line for judgment from God if we are not properly friendly to the nation of Israel. And remember, there was no Jew in the time of Abram. There was no Israel at the time that Scofield penned the original notes, and it is doubtful that Cyrus Scofield would have even understood the enormity of the evil purpose for which his book was written. It was to have the most prominent Zionist publisher in the world, and it would deify a country that did not exist and would be born of force 40 years after his death. Not all Orthodox Christians were asleep during that time. Philip Morrow was one who saw both the heretical and the war-making dangers of the new religion and actually called it Zionism. Morrow was a well-known patent attorney, counsel for the Columbia Phonograph Company, and the Christian researcher who wrote legal briefs for William Jennings Bryan's famous court cases. In his 1927 book entitled Gospel of the Kingdom with an Examination of Modern Dispensationalism, Philip Morrow wrote, "Through an incident of recent occurrence, I was made aware of the extent, far greater than I imagined, to which the modern system of dispensationalism has found acceptance among Orthodox Christians, and also the extent correspondingly great to which the recently published Scofield Bible, which is the main vehicle of the new system of doctrine referred to, has usurped the place of authority that belonged to God's Bible alone." Philip Morrow tells us that he had been caught up himself in the evangelicalism or Christian Zionism of his day and learned about it from the inside. This has been the case with most of us who come to an understanding of Christian Zionism. The late Philip Morrow had been a source of encouragement to many critics of Judeo-Christianity who thought they were alone. Philip Morrow was a dedicated scholar with an engineer's logic and a lawyer's tenacity. That allowed him to foresee error in 1927 that Christian scholars are only beginning to acknowledge 80 years later. We, like Morrow, should also be profoundly sympathetic for those who are caught up in the error of Christian Zionism, dispensationalism, or Judeo-Christianity by any name, because they are among our families and best friends. Jesus' words require that we reclaim them back to traditional Christianity. Dr. F. Furman Curley is another unsung Christian scholar who saw the path to war in the error of dispensationalism. He was the head of graduate studies at Abilene Christian University. In 1983, he wrote a short book entitled The Middle East Crisis in Biblical Perspective, in which he takes sharp issue with those he calls Israel First Millennials and Christian Zionism's evil fruits of perpetual war in the Middle East. He names Hal Lindsey and the late Jerry Falwell as radical Zionist prophets who would help nudge the U.S. into endless war with Islamic states. Dr. Curley explained why. When the concept of Armageddon, as in Revelation 16:16, is raised, those who believe in a literal war at Armageddon often feel that Christians should work to start this war and should vigorously participate in it. Those in particular who view this present situation as Armageddon believe that Christians should support Israel with vigor, and they urge our government to take an active part in the conflict in the Middle East. Curley saw Christian Zionist support for Israel's brutal occupation of Palestine as a precursor to more wars in the Middle East and concluded, "One needs to be absolutely certain that the doctrine he follows is God's and not of men before he advocates a doctrine that would put the blood of other men on our hands." He explains the neo-Christian love affair with war as a religious fixation, stating, "Whereas Christians must pray for peace in the Middle East, premillennialists must pray and work for World War III so Armageddon will come. They cannot pray for peace in the Middle East." If a follower of Christian Zionism will only examine the simple teachings of Jesus in the New Testament, he will find there is not a single passage or phrase that would give a follower of Christ the cause to take the life of another man or another man's wife or a child in a faraway country. No such biblical permission exists.
This missile raid took place over Gaza City, and I was staying in a building that was owned by the Southern Baptist Convention, and they'd had it from there from the time that they actually had missions in Gaza City. They still owned the building. Probably nobody to sell it to. You can probably can't sell buildings there very easily. And it was a three-story building, and I crawled up on the roof when the missile started to come down with my camcorder and photographed this missile raid on the Palestinian people, the people of Gaza City, on that Thursday night about 3 a.m. And this is the sounds that people in Gaza hear almost every night somewhere in Gaza. If you live there, you'll hear this sooner or later. And if you hear that in the distance, that's a bomb. But that's about the fourth explosion. Last night, large numbers of people killed. Now I hear the ambulances running.
Hi, my name is Shireen. I'm from Gaza.
Shireen's home, the Gaza Strip, is the best example we can find of the bitter and ungodly fruit of Christian Zionism.
I'm Palestinian from Gaza, which is considered as a big jail. Can you imagine this feeling that I feel always when we are bombed?
Apache helicopters hovering up there. Here comes a missile coming down. It's happening just at bedtime here, 9 o'clock at night. Just when the kids go to bed.
This feeling, exactly this feeling, that you are in your room, in your bed, you're praying.
Here we are again. The chopper's very close this time. He's up there terrorizing people, shooting from right behind us. Another bomb.
You're praying because you feel that your room, only your room, will be bombed from the whole building.
Here comes another one fired from a much lower angle right off to my left. They're coming right down across the town. This one fired right over our heads. It's 3 a.m. and the killing is going on. Imagine, the United States paying for all this.
You didn't have him. You didn't have her. You have a news saying that go to the hospital because he's there. He's dead. He's in the fridge.
You have witnessed a killing air raid. And you have heard Shireen tell us of her prayers that the next Israeli bomb will not hit her bedroom. The occupation and bombing of 1.5 million Gazans like Shireen would end overnight were it not for the enabling support of well-intended and otherwise decent Americans who do not know what act they support. This film is dedicated to Shireen from Gaza and others, some Arab followers of Christ and some Muslims who aided in the making of this film. Shireen asked Charles Carson, who filmed her interview, could he fix this? He couldn't tell her that he could fix it, but We Hold These Truths is dedicated to keeping that promise to try and not to quit trying. We implore you to show this film to every mainline pastor. Traditional and Orthodox Christian churches do not believe that God ordained the state of Israel, so they will listen. They need to go further in understanding the roots of Christian Zionism so they can take their part in recovering America for God.
Special thanks to Douglas Newsom at BBS Radio, working the studio for the show. thanks to Charles E. Colson, who wrote and produced the documentary on Christian Zionism, which was published several months ago. Discernment of Spiritual Deception Behind America's Endless Terror and War Policies is the beginning of wisdom for healing of the American Republic. So happy trails until we meet again, and we'll see you next time around. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to this presentation on Cosmic Love. I hope you have enjoyed receiving this as much as I have enjoyed giving it. There's a new relationship with all humanity that is maturing with the new synchronicity of instant, everywhere, interactive, net reality. Cosmic Love is the heart of this synchronicity. Tools and processes that empower the wisdom of Cosmic Love is the purpose of the Worldwide Love Foundation. The family of man is now making a quantum leap into a new consciousness as never before in history. Our awareness as humankind is expanding, and the internet reflects that multidimensional expansion of consciousness into new realms of omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence in the power of cosmic love. This has huge implications. The more information we have, the greater the need to get it all in order. The more knowledge power we have, the greater the need for the wisdom of cosmic love. That should be common sense, and it's time to make common sense more common. If you agree that the American Revolution was huge for freedom and opportunity in the world, look what's happening to the whole world now. A new connection with cosmic love is positioning the golden rule, law, language for a golden age in our spirit, our minds, our hearts, and the soul of humanity. We're on the threshold of a global revolution that is awakening the angels of our better nature. Let's be honest and reason together. Cosmic love has always been the golden rule law language for every golden age in cosmic history. Some things don't change, only the ability of the human mind to grasp the full implications of the world in which we now live. That has changed with the internet, and like an adolescent who is not an adult yet, but not a child either, the internet is now installed, operational, and ready to take our personal and planetary consciousness to the next level. That would be cosmic love, and the foundation principles for this is the love model, a universal law language interface for net reality that represents the five-dimensional intelligence that can fulfill a global revolution in higher consciousness. Check it out for yourself. See how it works. Consider the role you can play and how you can benefit. The sooner you get the vision of this cosmic love thing, the sooner you can profit from a wholly new economy that will transform all our social networks with extraordinary abundance of everything held sacred by free people worldwide. There is a new intelligence that is defining and refining humanity's evolutionary ascent. The higher the intelligence of universal cosmic love, the greater the results. The gateway to higher consciousness is, in fact, the language of consciousness. The five-dimensional intelligence that cosmic love frames in form and frequency, as in frequently. Once you get it, how the Holy Spirit of love and action can heal our individual and collective conscience, it will become self-evident how cosmic love can nurture and culture the net reality that brings a Holy Spirit to the collective consciousness of humanity. Love heals all, always has, always will. The more cosmic and universal the vision of love, the greater the results. Welcome to the opportunity. It's time to link the light workers who are love makers. The internet now provides this opportunity for extraordinary synchronicity, as will empower wisdom with cosmic love. Someone had to do it. Now you can. Network for the net worth of this new net reality. You have the vision now before you. What you do with it can change your world and the world at large. We are all co-creators in the cosmic scheme of cosmic love. The great spirit of great love is the great opportunity that genuine freedom gives all of us. Heaven knows that there is nothing more valuable than the vision of cosmic love that has found its time. Experience the Worldwide Love Foundation in your consciousness, being, and world. Care enough to share this vision of great opportunity. Step into the circle of global connection as you center and connect with the five-dimensional intelligence of cosmic love that provides the cultural DNA for a golden age on Earth. Miracles happen when cosmic love is conceived, believed, and achieved. You are that miracle when you become the cosmic love you want to see in the world. Own this vision as your own. Embrace the intrinsic virtue of cosmic love. Make the vow to do what you can because you can. Claim the victory for all mankind aspiring to live as kind men. Here's to winning from the beginning of a global revolution that will finish worldwide with the great experiment and representative government gave humanity with the American Revolution. Heaven on earth is virtually in your hands. Do you want the keys to the kingdom? Are you ready to assemble the components to the capstone of cosmic love vision? Discover the five-dimensional intelligence that will empower your own virtually untapped gifts and talents. Consider how you can make a difference, if not the difference. It's your life, your world. Take command. Give cosmic love the chance that you want for all mankind. Now you can. See for yourself. Do it for cosmic love, and heaven knows cosmic love will bless your life far beyond this one. Sooner or later, what goes around comes around. You can call that good karma, or the justice of cosmic law, or just the blessings of cosmic love. It's the same thing. The abundant life is born in abundant love. The more cosmic that love, the more abundant is your life. Personally, I can't think of anything better to do, and I hope you feel the same way. So keep in touch with cosmic love. It only gets better as you pay attention. This is how cosmic love works. Pay attention because attention pays in ways that make cosmic love the new currency for global peace and prosperity. Your attention is your consciousness. The next economy for planetary civilization will pay attention to the value of virtue, the virtue of cosmic love. The family of man and our global village must be connected to this one virtue. We must pay attention to the first principles of higher consciousness if we are to transcend the old paradigms of scarcity consciousness that scarcity economics has created. This is the whole point of cosmic love. We won't heal our personal and planetary problems with the same consciousness that created the problems. The best hope for humanity is the charity of goodwill among mankind. This is the charity of cosmic love in action. This is the Holy Spirit of cosmic love in man that raises mankind with loving kindness. I hope you appreciate this message and share it with others. That may be just your circle of influence with family and friends, or it may be every news group or blog on the internet where light workers and enlightened netizens, global citizens, hang out. By the grace of cosmic love, enough good people will do enough soon enough to quickly turn the tide of global consciousness from the paradigm of scarcity to the paradigm of abundance that cosmic love cultures. May the quickening and awakening of consciousness begin with you and your own personal evolution in higher consciousness. Thanks again for listening to Cosmic Love.